Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, you always get respect from us, but what we have found out and continue to find out daily is veterans are getting no respect from the Department of Defense nor from the VA as the catastrophe just gets worse and worse. Well, Denise has been up there prowling around and trying to find out what's happening in Washington for a couple weeks.
I'm
Denise,
here, Doug.
Fantastic.
Hey, the breaking news today is it looks like the White House has settled on Bob McDonnell, who was a Army veteran of 5 years, went to the academy. His dad was a World War II Army Air Corps, and he is the one that the White House will put up for Secretary of the VA. He was with Procter & Gamble for 33 years. We need good management. And this guy may fit the bill, okay? No longer any generals and all that don't know about running huge companies and making it effective and living up to what it's supposed to. So we've got a new nominee from the White House that broke about a couple of hours ago. We still are without a Veterans Affairs Undersecretary of Health. That is empty. We may need to replace the benefits person. Who knows?
We should replace the benefits person because that
is... Yeah, she doesn't want to accept Gulf War illness, so, you know, she hasn't endeavored herself to us, that's for sure.
Well, she's been destroying... I mean, totally confirmed they've been destroying records and altering records. They've been disregarding 4 out of 5 claims because even the internal documents confirm the relationship, and she disavows it.
So we have some hope. We have a corporate person that is an academy grad, served 5 years. His dad was a World War II Army Air Corps. So, you know, we've got somebody with a tremendous amount of corporate experience coming in.
But the question is, will he be beholden to the Department of Defense and the Army since he went to the academy?
I don't think so, when he only served 5 years. And he graduated pretty well top of the class.
So we're looking at a brain.
Yeah. And being with Procter & Gamble, CEO, he had retired from them, and he was there for 33 years. What Procter & Gamble does is they really do bring in new people, train them, move them up.
Procter & Gamble has a reputation. I know I've had grad students and other individuals that I work with that finished their doctorate and went on to successful careers with Procter & Gamble, so that's a company that, you know, has a reputation for being fairly above board.
Worldwide, and it's not just drugs. I mean, they had paper products and everything. So, you know, we've got somebody now with, I think, the proper management experience and backing. You know, we'll see if there's any hang-ups when they go to confirming him. But I don't see problems with that, honestly, when you get somebody with that kind of talent. You know, and of course, you know, we're 2 years down the road from elections and new people. But I have hope. You know, I was hoping for somebody like Jim Webb that had been Secretary of the Navy, who had served Marine and Navy, and, you know, had served as a senator, congressman, and a lawyer. I thought he would have been a good choice. But, this, you know, we need somebody with management skills, number one, and not so much military management.
You know, we've had a failure. We've had Jim Peek. General Peek was in there before, General Shinseki. And, again,
almost everybody I think we've ever had military. Nicholson, Principe, Jesse Brown. You know, maybe this is a new framework they can come up with and clean up the mess, because it is a mess. Going to take some while to get out of this. And, you know, I don't think he has anything behooving to anybody. So he can go in and clean out the bad management.
You know, one of the things that I meant to ask you, you've been so busy for the last few weeks, but one of the confirmations, the investigations that came out, and this came out, you know, I guess about 2 weeks ago, June 22nd.
Yeah.
You've been harping and talking about the total failure of the VA to provide care for the females.
Yeah.
And that has come out completely. The headline, VA falls short on female medical issues. And it's as if when I look through the report and look through the press release and the report, is what you've told them that I know for, 15 years, 18
yeah,
years?
You know, it's things that I keep harping on, and I have a full list, and I start repeating myself because they never seem to hear. You know, one of the upsetting things for me is this wasn't one administration. This has been going on for a long time. We knew the VA was broken when we came out 23 years ago. Chuck Horner even said we didn't know how bad it was broken.
You knew it was broken back at the Vietnam War, though, too, because you were treating the casualties that came back from
Nam
and then seeing them transition into a nightmare.
You know, I trained one of my rotations, at least one, was at the VA in Houston, the old VA. And we have Vietnam vets coming back. Then I trained students at the VA here in Denver. You know, so I've seen it. You know, I've seen the care, you know, outpatient, you know, inpatient. We're taking students up. It's always concerned me, you know, always. You know, your heart is there. I mean, I remember going in, and I don't know how this guy recognized me as a vet. We recognize each other. It's crazy, but that's what happens. But he was a survivor of the Bataan Death March. He had not talked to anybody else, nursing-wise or whatever. He started talking to me, blew the nurses away, blew my students away, because I sat down with him and I listened. There is such a wealth of history with these guys. And by sitting down and hearing their stories, you're showing them the respect that they earned.
That doesn't happen today, because when you go in the VA, it's Mr., 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 and they do everything tend to separate you from your proud military service.
Yeah.
And they don't refer to, I mean, the missions you did on, I mean, Rollo again had flashbacks. He didn't make the parade yesterday. We had vets from World War II, Korea, Vietnam. Guys that are still in, guys that have just came back, Desert Storm, were all on our float or running alongside our float yesterday and prayed. So it was wonderful. And the response over in Gifford, Illinois, that just, you know, last November got wiped off the face of the earth. So this was the first big parade and shindig and everything for that community as it recovered.
But you know, our health care has got to be second to none, period. I mean, you know, Wilford Hall. I was at Wilford Hall, the Mecca for...
Hey, I was a patient in Wilford Hall.
And we had, you know, when I first got there, I was assigned to post-op floor. On one side, we had kidney transplants and plastics. We had some astronauts come in for their treatments or physicals. On the other side, we had open heart. I trained in Houston, the Mecca. And I was horrified. We had septic rates, unbelievable. We were packing the open heart surgery patients. I mean, it was a big enough transition for me when I left Houston and went up to Dallas to the medical facilities there. And I worked some public health for a while, you know, in Denton County. Saw a little bit of everything. So, you know, I've done a lot in my life between critical care, ER, flight nursing, field nursing, critical care nursing at various institutes, Massachusetts, Kansas, teaching students. It was a love of my life. Military was the love of my life. I loved flying, almost went to pilot training, almost went to medical school. And I miss those days. I miss the days of my flight nursing with the 130s or the 141s or the C-9s that I cross-trained on all three. I'm proud of the youngsters that stayed in my old unit, that became nurses, became officers, served in Iraqi Freedom and in Afghanistan. I worried about them. I still worry about them, but I am so damn proud.
You know, one of the bad things about it, I mean, you were on Log Base Charlie during Desert Storm, medevac right up there in the line.
Well, and I feel like the ones that stayed in my unit that went to Iraq and Afghanistan got what I was really looking for, which was true combat nursing. I did not serve over in Vietnam. I was there during the era. I certainly saw them coming home. But there is no experience that, and people have to realize the medical advances made through the wars, medical and nursing experience, the EMTs that become practitioners or go on to medical school.
You know, one thing on the nurses and everything, and we've got to remember this, for those that are listening and haven't read it, I highly recommend Home Before Morning.
Oh,
both
yeah,
Denise and I had the pleasure of knowing and working with Linda Vandeventer and the rest of her staff. I mean, you know, there's so many of them, Kitsy Jens and Linda and, oh, man, all that whole group.
I can still remember meeting them when Gulf War started being brought up, and I said, why didn't you fight harder for Agent Orange, you know, why don't you get involved? And it was kind of like, oh, my God, you know. but I was raring to go, as you know. I was researching and helping people get up to testify at our first hearings in 93. I learned the ways of the Hill. By going and doing, by the seat of my pants, I learned, listened to people that were listening to me, sharing, you know, medical stuff, and then them sharing the ways of Congress. It's not a pretty sight up there. The making of a law is like making sausage.
You know, one of the things that's also...
There's very few that I can say I truly trust up there that have the instinct and the do-right thing, no matter what. And veterans' issues, military issues should be completely bipartisan, if nothing else. If nothing else, our military and our veterans deserve bipartisan consideration of all pros and cons. I've seen too much of war. I've seen it become a corporate enterprise from, you know, probably every war, but definitely Vietnam with Brown and Root, definitely the Gulf War and the current, you know, wars we were in with Halliburton, the planning that went into it before we ever, you know, civilian population ever knew what was coming down the pike at them. I don't like that, you know. Multi-billionaires, a billion with a B, are made from that. And sometimes, you know, yeah, Saddam was a bad guy, but we were trading favors and balancing them, Iraq, Iran. This has gone on for centuries. I was just watching kind of a parallel today with World War One, and how a lot of the things that have happened in the eastern countries that we're in started in World War One.
Yeah, we got to remember
dictatorial decisions to make lines in the sand of who got what, not considering religion over there or anything else that's centuries old. I mean, what do we expect to transplant democracy? It doesn't happen easily. We did not have an easy path, and we're still not a perfect democracy. We're better than so many others, but to try to force that on to a country, you're not going to win that way.
You know, we go back to 1916 and 1970, the Sykes-Picot Treaty that France and Britain put together that carved up and created the whole Middle East and the countries as we know them today and installed puppets and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, that outlines it completely, and while we're there, and to me, it just is astonishing. The other thing, you were up on the Hill again when this all broke, but what was the feeling when the reports came out that the VA had doled out over $100 million in bonuses over the last 3 years when they knew it was,
you know,
catastrophic?
I think a lot of people knew about that, and it's horrifying. It's just like the conferences that they overspent with. You know, it's like the good old boy network and old girl network, I guess I could include. But, you know, there is no need for bonuses if you pay them an equal salary of what they would get civilian life. If they've done an outstanding job and they get recognition, I can see some. But with all the things that were going on that we knew were broken, it's corrupt, you know? I'm sorry. Let me tell you about my trip, okay?
Yeah, let me cover one more thing on the other thing, too, and this comes into the bonuses and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
You and I have been harping on it. You and I have prepared a continuing medical education form dealing with devastating illnesses. I was doing it before you were doing it before we met, and you and I have been doing it together ever since. But the doctors and nurses at the VA, and when I was over there again this week for my own care, they don't want to take the time beyond the 8 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon to do any continuing education or do the research or go and look at it. I met with the department head, and I said, what are you going to do? Here's your info.
Yeah, what floors me, totally floors me, is they have a VA website that I use as a Bible for our veterans. That VA website, the VA publications, the U.S. Code 38, that is your live by. Just like we had regulations in the military, you had to know them and use them. And, you know, it floors me that doctors don't even know about the Gov4 registry. The vets don't even go and use it. I'm going, you, number one, need to go see their website, see what's down on Gov4, and you use that. You use your 38 USC code. I'm not a certified service officer. I don't know if I ever want to be. But I know people that are in the system that know those well. And, you know, you consult with them. If you're going to do your claim yourself, more power to you. But you better be consulting with some very good VSOs that can guide you. Or, you know, we've got one now on the page that's a rating official. He knows his stuff. I'm telling people, listen to him. He's there doing the actual adjudication of the claims. He knows right from wrong. I don't want to give out wrong info. I constantly give a link because we've all been given wrong information sometimes. The material you mailed me that was up in your vision, that hasn't been out there on the VA website.
None of that is. The post-deployment physical is form is not out there. The medical orders for the burn pits is out there. And remember, the burn pits go to Desert Storm.
People need to
DU.
Read the official report starting with the hearings that started in 93, Senator Riegel's report, Senator Rockefeller, Shea's multiple reports, the GAO reports. Then they need to read the IOM reports that came out. And when we started the RAC in 2002, there's been a report, 2004, that put stress to bed, 08, and this recent one for 14. On the VA RAC page is all the minutes, agendas, minutes of each presentation. I mean, use those. Use that. Use PubMed research articles. I have a page where I leaf put the link on if I don't get the whole article for free and a link to it. Use those research articles. You know, educate your doctor to start with. Do you know what's on the damn VA website? Number two, you know, continue that education to the Riegel report, the Rockefeller report, to the good IOM report that came out, 2010, I think it was, to the RAC report, to the research reports. Make it easy for them. Highlight things. Put sticky notes on it. Put little sticky notes that take you right to the page, you know, because they're not doing it. It's not required. I've brought it up. I've brought up having required webinars, having the RAC have live webinars that the VA people should be required to listen to as it's going on and ask questions. There is no collaboration between the researchers that are doing a good job with the clinicians in the VA. Leah Still has gotten down there when she moved to Texas and really got with the Temple VA and is trying, okay? Uses her extra time. I know Galam has been interacting with the VA. Dr. Klimas was part of the Miami VA. We need these people as our core educators, these researchers, doing core education, you know, like a one-hour seminar, that these doctors and nurses need to, you know, have to be there, watch it, have a little short test afterwards, and sign their names and take, you know, get CME for it or continuing education for nurses. That is what's needed to really bring this about. I doubt they know about the radiation sign-up list for the atomic vets or the Agent Orange list or other things, the SHAB list, the, you know, on and on, you know. They have to have the education to be around us vets. It's obnoxious as a nurse, as a vet, to have to be taking stuff in and trying to educate them.
I've been doing that for so many years and trying to help people. And, you know, you missed the show last week, but as you know, we had another veteran who was denied care at the Downey Great Lakes Navy Hospital VA in North Chicago, Illinois. He lived less than 5 minutes from the hospital. He started having chest pains. He got over there right away, and they left him in the ER parking lot where he died for 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I mean, literally.
Let me
died
kind of
outside the door
I...
in the ER parking lot because he was denied care at the Downey Great Lakes Navy Hospital VA in North Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah.
His family called him to the show.
You know, they've paid out tort claims, which is when there's a wrongful death. I think there's going to have to be a lot of that done. I think a lot of people need to be fired. I'm really disappointed that Gibson, you know, who's acting secretary, doesn't feel like people need to be fired for waiting lists. I mean, he doesn't need to stick around, as far as I'm concerned, after he said that, because he truly doesn't get it that people died. People's health condition went further down the tubes. If they didn't die, their cancers advanced to the point that they lose time to counterbalance the ravages of cancer or cardiac disease or renal disease. And, you know, there needs to be a house cleaning. You know, that hasn't happened in a long time. We both know that. We've got legacy people that have interfered. We go for with every issue. It's like they say it's their money. It's not their money. It's the government's money, and it's the veterans' money, and they work for the veteran. But let me run through kind of what I had in mind to do today, Doug. First of all, I want to just mention what my trip was about, what triggered it. I want to mention our legislation that's still up there. I want to run through the TAPs. I've just updated our TAPs. I'd like to read the names today. I'd like to focus on the medical and really explain hypercoagulation. I feel like this connects so much that and the mitochondrial disease that's being looked at. So that's kind of a lot to cover, but I want to mention also one thing. Our bills for the Desert Storm Memorial are still in the Senate side. Our bill for the Gulf War Research Reform Act is still there. They made an agreement with the Senate and House not to add anything to the high-priority bill on the waiting list and all that. Nothing would be added to that except dealing with the waiting list. So ours is still in process, along with the caregiver bill, the widow survivor bill, things that need to be dealt with. So, you know, there's a whole lot of needs out in the veteran community, but number one is cleaning out the VA. And then maybe we can make sense along the way and get our Reform Act done and our memorial and get something done on the caregiver. If it's just a small step on the caregiver to include our Gulf War vets that served in the same theater that the OIF people served, if it's a money issue, maybe we have to go stepwise, but we have some young people that are just as sick with invisible diseases that need that help now with young children at home.
They seem to me they spend so much time to avoid responsibility that the expenses that they spend trying to avoid responsibility that more than cover the expenses needed to do it right.
Yeah. Well, they're in a battle because the GAO did an estimate on the cost of this correcting the waiting list, and they don't feel like it's accurate. And I don't know if we'll be able to get an accurate figure until they do it, And just like we have emergency funds for war, I think we have to just say, you have an emergency fund for VA, And I want money that has not been spent, that's been talked about on the hearings, that they had so much money they didn't use in the VA. I want some of that bonus money to be turned back in. They didn't do the job. They let this happen. They need to give that money back. Okay, how in their own right soul can they live with themselves when they didn't do the job and let veterans die, let them languish on a waiting list? I mean, sorry, I almost feel like I wish I was a little younger, and even though I'm ill, I'd go up there and serve and kick butt like like Duckworth does, This is ridiculous. We need more vets with the conscience of a vet running for office, and that's not just our new vets. It is our Gulf War vets that need to get their act in order and decide to serve and fight for the veterans from the Hill.
Bonuses was 100, I'm looking at the report, $108.7 million bonuses as executives, employees in the past 3 years.
That's just the executive realm. That's not talking about the realm right below that, Doug.
Yeah.
That's the SEC, realm.
The super.
Yeah. I mean, for sure they didn't do their jobs, and then there's quite a few under them that shouldn't have had bonuses, too.
Well, you got to remember, we're looking at what the facts are. They were told not to do their job, and they got the bonuses because they did not do the required job, yet they did the job they were assigned to do.
Yeah, it's just like the conferences that they misspent money. I mean, and they spend so much money. Okay, solar panels will save us money in the long run, but is that what we really needed at the time? I heard about curtains, solar powers, furniture, and I'm going, the first priority is those who serve.
They bought all new furniture.
You don't have to have the best furniture. If you're serving people, moving them along, they're getting the help. Medical equipment, you need that. Okay? We have to look down the road and look at, savings with solar power and, blackout curtains, that kind of stuff saves money too. But, there's got to be some priority setting, some hard corporate decisions, and that's, I think this guy's going to be good. I don't know. Proof is in the pudding type thing. But
they bought all new furniture at the Danville VA in Danville, Illinois. Ileana is right on the Illinois-Indiana border. They threw out the other good stuff, and they bought new stuff that you can't even sit in because it is so awkward and uncomfortable. You go in there and you're in pain.
And what did they do with the old stuff? That's what I want to know. Are they recycling it?
I don't know. All I saw, it went into a big truck, and they unloaded the truck and put new stuff in and took the old stuff that perfectly good that I had sat on and put it in the truck and hauled it away. I don't know where it went.
Yeah, I'd like to know, because some of that had a good resale value or could be used in another facility that has worse stuff, Use recycle, But anyway.
Let's go back to what you found and what you saw.
Okay, mainly the reason that triggered this trip, was I wanted to go up to Orange, New Jersey. They had two studies going. One particular I was interested in is a mitochondrial study. Now, it's not Dr. Guillaume, but as usual, there's more than one way to get answers. And the researcher there has some good ideas. They had a state-of-the-art conference. That state-of-the-art conference on mitochondrial did occur. Dr. Guillaume was there, the people from Orange. Lots of people attended. They will be having a follow-up conference. And I do think the mitochondrial disease mimics, almost everything we have. I think that's a good turn of events that we're looking at that. So they had a mitochondrial study that they were doing, and they also had a fatigue study. They didn't want anybody with fibromyalgia diagnosis, and I talked to them. I said, you go back to that researcher, put them on the line with me, because so many of the vets have both diagnoses. If they don't, they probably deserve both, okay? So they did change it and say, okay, we'll take the fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue patients. That is doing, being done by the Kiesler Foundation up there. So actually the scans are being done over at a facility in West Orange. That's a very nice facility. I'm not sure what to say until the results come out, but they're scanning. They were going to do neuropsych evals as part one, and part two would be the scanning. They're not doing the neuropsych evals right now, although I said I'll send my neuropsych that I paid for, the full thing, to you. Look at it, you know, it might give you some ideas. But they did the scanning. A mitochondrial study takes about a day. The other one, about a day. It's up with war-related illness. They combine all that. You know, the researchers are up there on the 11th floor. East Orange, New Jersey is a very, very old VA and a very bad part of town. Our Denver VA may be old, but it's a sight better than Orange, New Jersey. Everybody up on the war-related illness center floor is very nice, approachable. Met another vet that lived in Pittsburgh that came in for his war-related illness study. There was two others of current vets that came in. I didn't get to know them that well. I got the one that came in from Pittsburgh into the research. He'll be going back on the 7th of July to do his two. But I flew in and out of D.C. because, of course, my daughter lives up there. And it's always good to see her, rented a car to do the drive to Orange, New Jersey. You don't get paid to travel. You get paid a certain amount for each study that kind of offsets the study. But as you know, I believe in our research, getting us other answers. So I was willing to do that. On Father's Day, we spent the day with my daughter, and Father's Day, we took the father and took him to the father of our country, Mount Vernon's place. I'd never seen it. I'd been over to the gift shop when it had been closed on me years ago. Finally got to see George's and Martha's house. They have an actor there, George Washington, actor that hangs around during Father's Day, Flag Day, George Washington's birthday. Very well sought after. That kind of made the day. He spoke as if he was George. You know, he knew his history. Very good for children that are up in that area that get to go there for a field trip. So that was a year ago. We took the husband with us, with me, and got to Annapolis and saw the Naval Academy. So we try to do a little something and bring the husband for Father's Day to see his daughter. Then we took off Monday morning to drive over to Orange, New Jersey. What roads there are up there? Boy, tow roads are 12 lanes wide at times, 10 lanes wide. Never seen anything like that, even in Texas. but they get backed up. Unbelievable population up there. But I went and did the studies. I think the mitochondrial study has good thought put into it. They do flow diameter. They do breathing tests. They draw blood. He went through the slides that he presented at the State of the Art Conference, and they put you on a treadmill, which I blew it because I admitted to my aneurysm, and he just didn't feel safe having me do the exercise portion. I said, well, you have a lot of vets that have things that you're not going to know about because they haven't been worked up, be it a cardiac situation, aneurysm, what have you. You know, I would stop my body and all that. I gave him a good talking to, but it didn't help. He wasn't going to risk. He said, it's not worth your life. And I said, oh, yeah, it is. But anyway, so, you know, we did everything we could short of the exercise and the testing after. Blew it myself by self-admitting. But anyway, he and his staff are very good. Duncan himself served in the Gulf War, the one you call and talk to, going back to school for advanced degrees. So very delightful staff they had. We also participated. They have a study up there doing blast injury research for the OIFOEF people. They need controls. They said we could serve as controls since we haven't had a blast injury. And we said, fine, we'll do that too. Squeeze that in. So we participated in that. One of their machines was down for me. The other guy got it. They got the part in. But they did autonomic testing to some degree. They did a balance station where the walls move and your feet move, and they have you hooked up so there's no fear of you falling on your ass. let's see, the test they did that to him that I couldn't get, it kind of turns out I have still a perforated eardrum, so it probably wouldn't have been done anyway. But that's to test your eardrum and your vertigo and balance and all. Let's see, what else did they do in that test? As usual, lots of questionnaires, the autonomic test, the vestibular testing with the eardrum, the balance sway test. Can't think of the rest of the little tests they did, but they worked it in, along with getting me ready for the other trials. And that way we participated and helped the next generation by being their controls. It helps because you get a little bit of money. I think I had $97 from doing that study. So it helped offset the cost a little bit. So, you know, I would recommend if Gulf War vets go up for the risk or for the research to get involved in it. We won't know if it's good or not until we participate. It's not like I can be glowing about Dr. Bach and the MEG study in Minneapolis or Dr. Guillaume or Dr. Klimas or Dr. Bronick at Georgetown, but it actually gave me time to meet these people. So now I've met the people at D.C., Orange, New Jersey, and I've got my referral in for Palo Alto. I did get that referral in. So I'm actually meeting these people and seeing and watching closely. I didn't get to meet that many that did the war-related illness. They have a kind of different group. But I know the Gulf War vet that was going through it ended up getting another diagnosis that he was having trouble getting. So that will help him. So they are a help. Is it perfect yet? I don't know if I could say it's perfect. I don't think we can see D.C. as being perfect. There's strengths in each program. Having Dr. Lee, the neuro guy up in D.C. Is good. You know, they still lean to wanting to talk about stress and diet and things like that, but I think there's some shifting going on, Doug. You know, I have more people coming out of there and feeling like at least they hear you. I'll say that. When your VA doctors across the country are kind of ignoring you when you bring up Gulf War, you don't get that same feeling at the war-related illness. They are hearing you and letting you talk about it and not ignoring. And, you know, I talked to them quite a bit about what's been done that maybe they didn't know about. And I'm going to put a package together and send it up to them. And I talked to them about how we were approached at Minneapolis with the MAG study that, you know, they really did feel that we've been done wrong to. And self-initiated, you know, being more concerned about us. And that little bit is a healing process in itself, if you know what I mean, Doug. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, that's the big problem, because when they don't take the time to listen to you and they're sitting there with their head stuck in their computer and their fingers on the keyboard, they can't do anything. I mean, it's going back to basic medical 101.
I'm hearing this from other vets, so I think it's more of, you know, whatever they say on a final report, at least when you're there with them, they're listening to you. And my God, Doug, I think you and I need to go around and whoever else that we can take that are knowledgeable and hit these sites and do educational forum along with the researchers we know, because it does make a difference. It you know, after you've been ignored and 24 years of people kind of, you know, just not believing you, having somebody that listens and doesn't automatically say stress.
Well, the other thing, too, that bothers me, and I mean, even the general public, they're in so far in denial based on the reports that have been given over the TV, the radio, and magazines and journals, that when you talk about what the reality is and show them the documents, they're just aghast, and they don't even know what to do.
Yeah, I think we need to make copies
of
the documents and send them to the key people, you know, at the risk, and highlight things for them. Because on the whole, they haven't seen those, Doug. You know that as well as I do.
Well, one thing that happened locally here, and this goes back to what you said, you've got to get out to your local newspapers, radio, and TV. Here in Champaign, Illinois, Urbana, Illinois, East Central Illinois, I did get to the TV and newspapers, the chief dogs, and I gave them the reports, I gave them the internal hidden documents, and boy, did they turn around and start trying to help everybody. I mean, it's there.
Once they had
the documents in their fingers, they were totally aghast. And the same thing with congressional staff. I found the new congressional staff had never seen these reports. They didn't know that they existed.
Yeah.
They weren't passed down by previous congressmen or senators. And, in fact, the DOD and the VA hide the reports so they don't know about them. I mean, the Zumwalt report's a perfect example, Agent Orange report.
We have to go up every time we have newly elected on the Hill and get an educational session going.
I remember when we helped George Bush, too, get elected, and you and I could actually wear our cowboy boots up to D.C. for a minute.
But anyway, I do need every document, and, you know, kind of, I've got the old stuff we handed in to Shea's committee, and we need to start providing that and more. It's kind of the underground education system, I guess, huh?
You know, we got the congressman here on the Vision 11 Physicians Guidance that we talked about, and you've seen that covers Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan, Ohio. The congressman has been handing that out now. They got it, they looked at it, and they just said, okay, we're going to start sending it out to everybody. So they're sending it out to vets. And one thing we found out in Illinois that the fathers, the bosses for the VSOs still don't want the VSOs to know that, or don't want them to know about the Zumwalt report or the, you know, the Somalia report for the DU medical care. They don't want them to know about the Army regulations or the VA directives.
Yeah, I
because,
mean,
again,
our,
the
our
cost.
VSOs, to some degree, have let us down, and we've known that for a long time, Doug. You know, they don't have the documents. They don't understand the vets. When we come in, we're so angry and frustrated. They don't get it. They really don't. It's more than the waiting list. It's the denials. It's the blank looks. It's the I don't believe in that, you know, attitude.
They don't want to believe it even when you put the document in their face.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about documents created by a vet. We're talking about the actual official reports.
So anyway, I've kept up with the hearings, and Wade going to the Hill with all this going on and knowing that we were kind of not the priority issue in formulating plans. And number one, I think everybody needs to write their congressman, I mean, excuse me, write their senators right now, since we have bills waiting on the Senate side that have already been through the House side. We need to be still calling the senators in D.C. We need to be thanking some of these people that do care about us and letting them know that we've been watching them and we expect them to come through for us, you know. Personal notes to their own staff, to their home offices. I mean, we need to take a few minutes each day, write a little personal note about Gulf War illness, about our memorial, about our need for extension of caregiver for illness victims that are really needing it, ALS, the cancers, various things that maybe they haven't gotten around to presumptive, but they need it. We need to get the reform bill through and tell them that we are watching them and our votes count. And the other thing I did is I set up a read file. I was putting everything on my personal page and, you know, besides the research and recruitment research and all that and the tabs. But I started putting just every different article that I used to, you know, put on my own page to go back and read when I had more time. I set it up as a Denise Nichols read file. And so now I've gone back and searched on all the wait lists to find Desert Storm veterans that spoke up. The reason I'm doing that is most of your articles tell you who the journalist is. Gives you a link to their email. People, if you're in that area, you treat that like gold. You call that person. Feed them information. Beg them to do articles. Beg your news stations to do articles. We need a resurrection of the Gulf War illness to be talked about. And the only way I know is break down the media doors again.
The other thing we've got is the toxic exposures bill.
Yes.
And that's looking at all the toxic exposures at all the former military installations, which are called FUDs.
Right.
And also
that's
looking at all the installations.
Sponsored legislation. We need to give that attention.
Yeah, and then one other thing we've had, I know, unfortunately, I was there, and I think, I don't, yeah, you were in the Air Force, not the Army, but Fort McClellan has come up on the radar screen with incredible levels of toxic exposures. We got
they've got a bill out there, too, to cover them, like Camp Lejeune was covered.
You know, one thing that scared me is when they continued with Project Shad and Bacillus Lobegi, that was reported in the Birmingham News by David Parks. You know David, he's an incredible guy in the early days of all this.
Right.
And that was confirmed because it not only got everybody in Ohatchee and all the areas and all the communities around the Pelham Range, but it also got cross-transferred out and contaminated all the way back to Birmingham. And individuals, I mean, Dave Park got sick and his family got sick. And, boy, they went bonkers. I don't know if you remember that. They were just literally, here they're doing it, and then they got all the chemical agent contamination there. We got all the DU work, the Air Force contamination from the Air Force NBC cell is basically an isolated area. And then the ranges are just a nightmare down there.
Doug, let's take the 15 minutes that we have left. Okay, I'm watching the watch. And I really want to talk about hypercoagulation.
Yep, you did the
okay.
work on that.
number one, we had our guy, Les Simpson, that took the blood cells and looked at it under a high-powered microscope. The red blood cells, what we saw early on, and you can still go back and track your lab work, what we saw is the red blood cells from before the war to when we came home had a drop. It was still in the normal level, but it dropped. It shifted. It changed. And with that, you know, it's when I had a dentist that had served sending us over, and his brother had been Agent Orange, and our teeth were loose. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have a good blood circulation, DU getting in there, maybe misplacing your calcium, yeah, you're going to have problems with your bony structures, be it the teeth, be it the disc in your spine, you know, any of your bony surfaces. Now, we go past that, and Les had looked at those blood cells. They were not a spherical shape. They were like a donut.
I remember looking at ours under the microscope, and it terrified us when you and I looked at them with the doctor.
Yeah, that
position.
Was a dark field. That was something else altogether. But when your cells are not spherical, you're not going to have, you know, the ability to transfer oxygen as easily. That's going to interfere with it. Okay? That's number one. The red blood cell count dropped to the low normal. Okay, that's a change in oxygenation in your blood. The next thing I discovered, and I'm walking my way through this, when I was up there working, my legs were swelling, feet were swelling, hip pain in the calf, the terrible calf cramps, I had, my hands were cold, my feet were cold, kind of like Raynaud's syndrome.
I get cold even when it's hot during the summer, and it's,
yeah,
just, it's astonishing. Like, I mean, they're confirming it, doctors are confirming it, but they're going,
what's going
on? We don't
on?
Understand it. What's here?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, it's a mitochondria and, you know,
now,
perfusion
said,
problem.
I never pulled this out, but I know he recommended, you know, a off-the-counter thing, a primrose, evening primrose, which might help with the red blood cell situation. The other thing that happened was, next thing that we did was I was at Dr. Ray's, and I don't think he did this to you, but he drew an arterial and venous oxygenation simultaneously.
The Birmingham VA did it on me, and it freaked him out because they put me on a treadmill, put me on a pulmonary function, and drew both simultaneously and live.
And what you will see is you're fully oxygenated, and I'm not talking about the finger thing, okay? I'm talking about actual blood tests. You're fully oxygenated in your arterial system. Your venous oxygen goes around the whole system. You should have oxygen being transferred out of the blood, out of the blood vessels, and into the cells, and the mitochondria is part of that.
But the mitochondria and the cells can't use it, and that's what they're finding out. The...
Right, and the venous oxygen came back sky high on that. Dr. Ray said, how are you walking around? And I said, I'm a stubborn Texas girl, Capricorn. You know, I'm going to suffer through this, but I'm going to do it. But that was a clue. Then, you know, in 99 with Dr. Hanna at the CDC conference going, no one's paying attention to what we're having. In theater, we had to evacuate the females out because we couldn't control their menstrual cycles, which speaks to hormone changes. It also speaks to the normal cycle, but we couldn't control it. So they ended up getting air vac down. Early hysterectomies, they couldn't carry the fetus to term, okay? We had nosebleeds that were occurring. We had the bleeding gums that were occurring. We had blood in the stool, blood in the urine, you know? And I'm going, no one's paying attention to this, you know, besides the rashes and, you know, the chronic fatigue and the pain. And the cramps in our legs and being cold in our feet and our hands when other people are perfectly warm, something's wrong. And with that, Dr. Berg had looked at it with OB patients a long time ago. Then he had looked at it with chronic fatigue patients. It was abnormal. So Dr. Hanna and Dr. Berg put their heads together with Baumschweiger and others, and we did the first study that was independently funded. The lab went in depth. So we found out we have hypercoagulation. What does that mean, people? Let me explain it as simply as I can. Hypercoagulation means your blood is thick. It's thick.
It's like the oil in your car when the temperature changes. It starts thickening up so it doesn't flow and doesn't function right.
So you're going to have lack of oxygen. Lack of oxygen in the brain, you're confused. You're irritable. You're restless. You know, going through the hyperbaric chamber, if anybody did that, hypoxia, you know, those are symptoms. You will also have the cramps in your legs. You can have deep vein thrombosis much easier. You can have pulmonary emboli form because the blood is thick. You can have, you can start having atrial fibrillation.
No, just all
which will lead to clots being formed and thrown off into any part of the body. You can have strokes occur neurologically. Your carotids are, you know, getting gummed up. Your carotid arteries are getting gummed up easier than if you did not have this. Your renal system, your liver system, it's all based on blood flow. If you have hypercoagulation, thick blood, you're also going to have a blood pressure change because blood pressure is based on like six things. One of them is the density, the viscosity of the blood. Okay? So your blood pressure will change. You may never have had blood pressure problems. You're going to have blood pressure problems. Elevated blood pressure. What happens with that? You're going to have the left side of the heart having to pump harder because your blood's thicker. you're going to have the left hypertrophy of that wall, of the biggest wall of your heart pumping against resistance. You're also a possibility of having backwards pressure, which would affect your pulmonary system and your right side of the heart.
I remember me and Liam, when we found this up at the Warringer's Clinic in Washington, D.C., was freaking out because he started measuring the blood pressures in all four locations at the same time, and he saw exactly what you're describing, and it's just kind of like, what the heck is going on? The other thing, too, it just connected me, and I didn't ever connect it until you just mentioned it. The problems we're having with the memory and all the other stuff is identical to when we went through the altitude chamber during flight training during the Vietnam War.
Exactly.
And that like never dawned on me until just now, Denise.
Yeah, well, it's because I'm putting it in very simple terms so people can understand what Denise has been yelling at about all these years.
You know, I remember because when I went through the altitude chamber to get flight qualified, that was in the late summer, early fall of 1969 when I was flying B-52s. And we had to go up there in the altitude chamber. You took the mask off and all the stuff. I mean, you went through all that stuff, too.
And we're having sleep apnea show up. Now, some of that's structural, okay?
Yeah.
Some of it's central. Your autonomic nervous system is becoming involved, your mitochondrial cells.
Well, me and Lee has found that on everybody up there.
So this is critical. You know, I can almost say that if we got the data on cardiacs and all the other problems, we would see an elevation. You know, Dr. Kahn has said elevation in respiratory problems, cardiac problems. Okay? It all connects. We've had the pulmonary embolus occur in walking miracles as far as I'm concerned. We've had carotid vessels having to be cleared before the normal age span you would have to see it. We've seen earlier than normal cardiac involvement, having to have bypasses or stents placed. Then another factor comes in that you have metals that were in the Gulf War. Not so much DU, but, you know.
Everything's there.
Other, you know, Kelly Kennedy covered that well a couple of years ago in her article and the research that came out, the other metals. And so then we have stents being placed, we have coils being placed if you have an aneurysm, and that's another metal. Are they going to stay clear and last as long as others? I kind of doubt it. I don't have any statistics to go on that. Because you need to treat the hypercoagulation. Now, Dr. Berg, originally, you know, heparin. Why heparin? It has an anti-inflammatory effect that you will learn if you really dig through everything called heparin. I did not know that it had an anti-inflammatory in it for quite a while until I dug and dug and dug on heparin. Coumadin doesn't have that, okay? He was using a low-dose heparin, trying to get it into a lozenger form so you wouldn't even have to stick yourself.
Hey, now, one last
aspirin.
Thing. We're running out of time here.
Yeah,
any
no,
idea what happened?
Real quickly, aspirin. At least that. You look for the anti-inflammatory characteristics in anything you use. And we've got to get this nailed down and attention paid to it. I know Dr. Bach, I think, is getting funded through CDMRP for some treatment that he's got ideas on. But we need to push that info out so that we can save some lives.
Let's continue this next week. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. Incredible information. Dave, can you help us get this written up for the archives?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. God bless you, and thank you, everybody.
We're going to start putting the pieces together next week. I want to talk about that.